Hey, 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 everybody. Welcome back to A Moment From Mom podcast. It's your girl, Nyriss. Happy to be back. Happy Tuesday. Another fresh week. Today, I'm bringing you another important topic. As always, you guys know that I like to touch on topics that, as parents, as mothers, we go through different things and we have different experiences and our journeys are all different. And today's topic is being a mom or parent with a child with a disability. This is a topic that's very sensitive, very important to touch on because, you know, there's different angles and different spectrums of parenting, and some of us have to have challenges that are not common for everyone. And I think it's important for us to, you know, to get to know this journey and these challenges that these particularly these moms struggle with and the things that they go through, and so that we can, you know, again, come together, be more sensitive, be prone to judge less. And to understand instead of, you know, being so quick to point fingers or to not be understanding to other people's situations. So, you know, I'm excited about this because that's, you know, for many of us listening, including myself, this is a topic that I'm excited about because it's knowledge for myself, you know, it's knowledge for me. And you know, knowledge is growth. So I'm excited to bring on my guests. I'll be right back. Okay, so we're back. I have my two guests on here with me. I'm very excited. I want them to introduce themselves. So Soleil, go ahead, introduce yourself.
I'm Soleil, born and raised in New York, living in Orlando. I have a 4-year-old son who has been diagnosed with Down syndrome at 27 weeks. And
Okay.
I'm blessed, no matter what it is, you know, take it day by day.
That's awesome. Awesome. Etta?
Hi, my name is Etta Santos. I was also born and raised in New York. I currently live in Orlando, Florida. I have a 4-year-old with Down syndrome, and I'm also very, very blessed.
That's great. I love how you guys, I love you guys' energy. It's contagious.
Thank you.
Because
Thank you.
no, I'm, you know, as a mom that doesn't have share the same experiences as you guys, it's beautiful to hear that. It's beautiful to see that energy, because a lot of times you don't know what another person is going through or what another person deals with on a day-to-day basis, which is why I like doing these podcasts, so I can get more knowledge and stuff like that and get to know you guys better as well. So,
It's a journey to get to where I'm at in the place of acceptance that I'm
of course, of course, it takes time. So I'll start with Etta. You have one child, Gabriel,
Right.
right? He was diagnosed at what? How old was he?
So I guess backtracking a bit, first when I got pregnant, I was 23. And I had a normal pregnancy. I was being seen by a high-risk doctor during my pregnancy because my little brother has a different type of syndrome, nothing related to Down syndrome, and nothing that, like, my son doesn't have Down syndrome because my brother has what he has, but they just wanted to be sure. So I was
Right.
being monitored by a high-risk doctor. Everything came back normal. My blood test came back normal. The biological screening came back normal. Everything came back normal up until when I gave birth to my son. He was born at 36 weeks, so he was born about a month early. And upon birth is when I was given the diagnosis, actually exactly a week after he was born.
Wow. Wow. And what about you, Soleil?
I was diagnosed with him prenatally at 27 weeks. I was at the age of 38, so I was already on the high risk. Everything was normal to that 27 weeks. When I did the test, it came out that he was Down syndrome. I, of course, was in denial. So the prayers kept, you know, they were high lifted. And we just prayed for the best. And I mean, like I said, he's doing great, like more than expected for his diagnosis.
Right.
I have a 20-year-old and then I have my 4-year-old. So I have a huge gap in between.
Huge gap.
Yeah. But go ahead.
How did you feel when you found out about that he had Down syndrome?
Honestly, I was in denial. Like, I didn't, you know, my whole pregnancy was, I was stressed out through my whole pregnancy. Just with, like, the doctors, the diagnosis. They kept saying that he was, his one of his legs, I guess, was smaller than the other and mm-hmm. is not. So I had a stressful pregnancy throughout my pregnancy, but everything, you know, came out okay. I'm not complaining for what the outcome is. At the end of the day, I push forward and I push mm-hmm. him. I mean, there's no limit with him.
Right.
You know? Yeah. What about you, Adam? How did you feel?
So for me, I was completely in denial. The thing is, when he was born, as soon as he was born, the NICU pediatrician was in the room when I gave birth to him, because obviously since he was considered preterm, they had to be in there just for security purposes. So when the pediatrician looked at him, I got a series of questions and I started feeling uneasy. And I'm probably gonna get emotional because I think about it like it was yesterday. But they asked me first if Gabriel had any Asian descent in his family. Like, was his father of Asian descent? And I said, no, his father's Puerto Rican. Like, and there's no mixture in his family. And my family is pretty much all Puerto Rican as well. Then they asked me, well, does he have any siblings that may be a little, you know, they were focusing about the eyes, that the eyes are really like, you know, like whatnot. And so I said no. And then they were like, well, we're going to test him for Down syndrome. And I was like, wait, what? Like, he was just born. They're usually, babies are usually puffy and swollen anyway. So like, how, what? And I just stood with that. And I was like, okay, whatever. Test him, because I know it's going to come back negative. I was so sure that it wasn't going to come out positive. And then I remember me sitting on the couch, already discharged on the Thursday. I gave birth on a Thursday. I was discharged. And then the following Thursday, I was sitting on my couch in my living room, feeding my child. And I got a phone call from the pediatrician that I had chosen for him. And she was mm-hmm. like, so I just wanted to let you know that the results came back positive and your child has trisomy 21. She was like, I'm so sorry. And that was it. Like, that was the end of the call.
Wow.
And I was like, what? And she was like, yes, I'm so sorry. She was like, but you should be scheduling an appointment with the geneticist that you have within the next week or so. And that was it. Like, literally the line went silent, hung up the phone, and that was it. And I was like, I was devastated, completely and utterly devastated. And I wasn't upset. Now I think about it in hindsight, I wasn't upset because I wasn't upset that my child had Down syndrome. I was upset that it was like mourning the loss of a child that I thought I was going to have, if that makes any sense.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because like I was planning for things to go differently just in my life, period, you know? And so mm-hmm. coming to the realization, like, my plans, they're not worth much. They're going to have to be completely switched and rearranged. But that's what I was dealing with at that time. And of course, the stigma behind having children with special needs is that you usually have them when you're older, which is not true, especially in my case. I was only 23.
Right.
And I met someone else who had her daughter, when she was 21, and she had Down syndrome. So it was just a lot to take, and it was really overwhelming. So I was in denial, and I was completely overwhelmed because I'm a single mom on top of everything.
I think it's right. More the denial.
Yeah, it was tough.
What kind of information did you guys have at that point about children with Down syndrome? Like, were the doctors helpful with giving you information? Like, do you feel like that was part of the feelings that you had?
Girl,
like, were they? Do you feel like it was linked?
No, heck no. Not even when I was, like I said, I was being followed by a high-risk doctor during my pregnancy, and I wasn't given any type of information about anything because everything was supposedly normal. And then with that phone call of the pediatrician telling me that it was that the test came back positive, that he does have Down syndrome, I'm sorry. Like, that's all I kept hearing back and like back to back to back. Oh, I'm so sorry that he has Down syndrome. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, instead of saying, hey, look,
right,
speak to this person, they can help y'all or
instead
something.
Instead of speaking hope into you, you know?
Right.
What actually took me out of that place of being like, oh, what is my life going to be like now? We reached out to the Down Syndrome Association of Central Florida. That's when literally, and the Down Syndrome Foundation of Central Florida, like, that's the two organizations that when I reached out, the very first thing that they gave me, that they told me, and it will always stick with me, was congratulations on having a child. And I think that meant the most to me, because it's like, you're congratulating me for my child. You're not telling me that you're sorry that my child has what he has. And that's what awesome. Any new mom.
You just gave me goosebumps.
That's what any new mom wants to hear. Congratulations that you had a child.
Of course.
On your new baby. Not, I'm sorry.
I feel like a lot of the issues that moms, and maybe I'm speaking generally, but I'm going to talk about it even about postpartum. I feel like a lot of the reasons why moms struggle with certain things, acceptance and whatever else comes attached to it, is because of the misinformation, misguidance that comes from your doctors, you know, because there's no, hey, here's hoping. No, it's like, oh, I'm sorry. Or, you know, it's always like a negative connotation mm-hmm. that comes attached to it.
Exactly.
To anything, you know, if your child has Down syndrome, if your child has any other type of learning disability, or if your child, like my twins were born early, you know, very early. They were born when I was 7 months, and they were 2 pounds wow. each. You know what I'm saying? So, if you don't have those people that are supposed to know more than you to tell you, listen, here's a guidebook, speak to this person, they're going to be all right, you'll be okay. You know, like, what do you need? You're going to go crazy and you're going to feel the feelings that you guys felt as well, you know? Were you guys scared at any point?
Oh yeah, I was definitely scared because I didn't know what the outcome. Like, I didn't have the resources. So I did a lot of research myself, and just by reading stuff, because I mean, kids with Down syndrome, you have a lot that comes along with it. There's kids that come out with cardiac problems. You have some that come out with gastro problems. You know, different effects. So it's like I wasn't educated. Like, my son had, I don't know if you guys are familiar with duodenal esthesia. It's considered a double bubble. And they found that when, at 27 weeks old, when they told me that it was a positive test, that he was Down syndrome, when they did the whole ultrasound, they found the double bubble. And that's like a gastro. So when he was born, like the minute he was born, I held him for like maybe like 2 minutes. And they took him straight to the NICU. 3 days later, he's having surgery for the gastro. And on top of that, he had his appendix removed.
Oh my God.
He had issues with reflux, acid reflux, you know? And they don't give you information like saying, oh, he's going to be delayed in walking. You know, like, you want to know these things. Like, you want to be informed. Like, if I got a positive test, give me the resources, you know? I feel like there should be more information regarding this. You shouldn't have to go online. Because honestly, when you go online, I think that's even more scarier than reading a paper. Yes. Honestly.
Of course.
Because different websites have different information.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, so I feel like right now, like, I feel like if I can help somebody and educate somebody and knowing that it's going to be okay if your son or daughter is born with Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. You know, there's hope. There's kids that my son, he's all over the place. He's a monkey. Yeah. Ada's just now beginning. Like he's, when I tell you he rides bike, he rides scooters, he's jumping, climbing, you know, we need more resources. It's not about just going to the Down Syndrome Association and doing playtime and just meeting parents. You know, we need more. I feel it should be more of a community. I mean, yes, you do have the Down Syndrome Association, but I feel like it should be more. Like the hospital should be more informative.
I also think that along those lines, though, that we need medical professionals that believe in our children. That they don't limit our children. And I'm just saying our children, meaning any child that has special needs, that they don't limit them to what they studied in a textbook. Because
exactly,
every child is different. And although like my son, Gabriel, and Josiah, Soleil's son, they're a week apart. They're very different, even in like their demeanor. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So Soleil's son, and I hope it's okay that I share that he does a lot more things than my child does. And it's easy for me to sit there and try to compare and be like, oh my gosh, my child. No, it's not even like that. Because honestly, I was at a point in time when my son was about 6-7 months that I was even terrified. I was more terrified than when he was first born about what he could achieve, because he started getting seizures and he mm-hmm. was completely behind. So, but before that, before all of that comes into play, we need medical professionals that believe that our children can get somewhere. Because sorry needs to stop. And because that's detrimental to somebody's psyche. Like, I don't need you to see that you're sorry that my child, I know I'm sorry too, you know what I mean? Like, you ain't gotta tell me that you're sorry.
Exactly. Oh, like for instance, I have a lot of he doesn't look like he's Down syndrome. Like, telling me that is not gonna make me feel any better. At the end of the day, he has what he has. It's not gonna change.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? It's like, let's quit with the profiling. Like, that to me is like profiling. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, he doesn't look okay. He doesn't look, but it doesn't make him any different than yours.
Right.
You know?
I think it's also the again, there's no information out there. For families, for people, like one of the main reasons I began my journey of social media and all my pages is because I feel like whenever, as a woman, we already deal with a million things and then you bring motherhood into it, there's not that much information for people out there to kind of understand, like, listen, this person has a disability, or this person has a child with disability, this person is going through postpartum depression, or this person has this person lost a child, this person, like, people don't really know what to say, so they just say whatever. They don't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times it's more offensive than what they can imagine, but it's because the information is not out there, or people are just not talking about it. I mean, this is not a conversation that, you know, any conversation is not easy to have, especially when you don't have the facts.
Right.
Like for me, I'm sitting here and I'm learning with you girls. You know what I mean? And I'm grateful for it, because there's a lot of things that you don't know. And you don't know that if you tell someone, wow, he doesn't look like he has Down syndrome, how that makes you feel particularly. You understand what I'm saying? So it's good. I'm glad that you guys are saying these things so that people now are aware. For my listeners, like, you know, maybe you shouldn't say that. You should say this instead, you know?
Right.
Exactly. So, like,
go ahead.
Like the R word.
Yeah.
Retard. Like, why we got to use the word retard?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
You know?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of teachable moments that I've had. Like, I'm telling you, just even at the supermarket, when people are like, oh, I have a grandson like him. And I'm like, he, like, handsome like him? Like, I have to check.
Right?
I have to check them real quick, and I do it, and I don't do it out of place of malice, because I know some people genuinely do not know.
Yes.
I do it out of a place of, I need you to just think about what you're going to say before you say it, and think about how that's going to make the other person feel.
Exactly.
You know, so I come back with like the quick witted remarks like that. Like I said, I always do it with a smile on my face, and I always laugh at the end and whatever. But I thrive on those teachable moments, because what you don't know is what you don't know. You know what I mean? You can't get upset that you didn't know something, but now you do know. So you know that next time in the future, you probably will address the situation differently.
Take a different approach. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How did your lives change since, you know, your children were diagnosed when they were small. So how do you feel your life changed?
That's a good question.
After they were here, you know, especially for you, Soleil, that you had a child before, you know what I'm saying?
Yes. Change, huge change, impact due to the fact, like I said, not really resources, and you having to go out there and find them yourself. That was a big change. And also due to the fact that I didn't have a lot of information. I did most of the Googling myself before he was even born. Mm-hmm. So it's like, let's say early steps. You're familiar with early steps, Ada?
Yeah.
They come in. They're supposedly the ones that give you more of the information, but you're really still in. I felt like I was still in the cloud. Okay, you're going to give my son therapy, but you're not telling me, like, is he going to be able to walk? Is he going to be able to crawl? Is it going to take longer? You know, like changes like that. Like that's, to me, that was a big change, because I mean, to have a child with a disability and have one that's normal, even though the age difference is different, it's huge. Right. It's a huge impact. And like I said, if we have more resources, not only with therapy, but psychological, you know.
Or like what to expect.
Exactly, what to look for. Because like my son had, what's that thing called? Torticollis for like 4 or 5 months. And let me tell you, the first torticollis is when his neck is sideways and he's just leaning to one side and he's just chilling like he could be sitting down normal, but his neck was literally to the left all day. And he was like that for a good 4 months. When it first happened, you don't even know how I was tripping. Okay, I even took him to the ER. It was that serious. It's like stuff like that. It's like, you know, your child, you have low muscle tone. I didn't know my son was low muscle tone. When I picked my son up, the first time in the hospital, like after he was allowed to be picked up from the ICU, because he was in ICU 18 days. I mean, I was able to pick him up. Then you feel it. You know, like when you carry a fake baby, Ada knows, and you feel like this weight and you're trying to pick him up, but it's just like the weight is, you know, like I wasn't informed that was going to happen.
We used to call my son Spaghetti Baby because he was just floppy. And that's what
floppy. You know, you're picking him up and you're trying to stand him up, but the muscle tone is so much there that they just lean. Like, they're just going to fall over. Like, I didn't know about that. Like, stuff like that. Like, I feel that once I was diagnosed, they should have gave me more information. Like, this is what could happen. Like, give me information. Right.
Expectations.
Yeah, expectations. Mm-hmm. Don't let me just be surprised. I don't like surprises, you know, and two, this was my pregnancy was an emotional roller coaster for me. Like when I tell you I was stressed from like day one, I was stressed, you know, and then it's like, you're in denial, you know, what's going to, you don't know what to expect. And then you give birth. And I mean, as soon as he's born, the first thing they show you is, oh, look at his hand, because they have, If you notice the palm of their hands, they have a straight line.
But you know that Gabriel doesn't have a straight line on his. He doesn't have the palm.
He doesn't.
Mm-mm.
He doesn't have a crease.
He doesn't have the palmar crease. Nope.
For real?
That's why they didn't think that he had Down syndrome when the doctor first had said it at the hospital. A lot of the nurses was like, but he doesn't have the characteristics of it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That was the first thing they laid out to me as soon as he came out. Look at his hand. It's just like, you know, and then like you just gave birth. You're in a, you know how we give birth when you're still in a cloud. You're going through this moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But like I said, at the end of the day, our children are blessed regardless. And I feel that kids with disabilities is also how you deal with them. You know, how you raise them. Like me, I don't limit my son. I'll let him do whatever. What others do, you can do too.
Yeah.
That's the way I see it. I don't limit my son at all. At all.
So I guess for me, in terms of what changed, my whole life just did a complete 180. Like I said earlier, like I'm a single mom, and I went into my entire pregnancy knowing that I was going to be alone once my son was born. So I think my life has changed in the sense that I live in, honestly, a constant worry. I worry for my child in terms of health. I worry for my child in terms of socialization with others. Education has been a battle since day one for me, for him. So I honestly, I changed because I just became completely focused on him. And I ended up tapping into like this unknown like strength that I didn't think I had. Well, I didn't even know I had. Not that I didn't think I had. I didn't know that I had.
You had it. You just didn't know.
Right, right. So I have honestly become so comfortable using my voice to advocate for him that, I do that without even thinking about it sometimes. Like, I go into, like, some deep conversations with people that I just meet. And they're like, whoa. And I'm like, yep. So... you know, and also I've learned so much. Like I joke around with my mom all the time. Like I think by now, with everything medically that my son has gone through, granted, at least my son did not have the heart issues that people with children with Down syndrome have. But I think with everything medically that our children go through, like we are legitimately like side doctors,
right?
Doctors, nurses, and everything. So yeah, so besides the constant worry, I mean, I guess that just comes with being a parent, right? Because everybody worries about their kids, but I think there's a special worry when you have a child with special needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my biggest worry is the bullying.
Mm.
Like when they're in school and you're not able to protect them,
right.
You know, like what people might say, how they might treat them, you know? Because they react different. Like my son, he has he's very hyper. When I tell you hyper, he's on go. Like from the minute he wakes up, the minute his feet hit the floor, he's on the go, go, go. He also has what is it called? What's the word? Ada, maybe able to help me. He doesn't know, like if he hits you, he doesn't know how to, that he's hitting you, but he's hitting you anyway. Like, there's a reaction. What's the word?
Oh, you got me stumped. I don't have... I'm
trying to think of the word. Well, anyway, he does that. So it's like, I could be holding him, or he'll throw himself on the floor, or, you know, I go through embarrassing moments. Yes, I do. But, you know... we gotta keep pushing forward and just educate more people on how to handle situations and how to approach a person with, you know, child with disabilities. Because at the end of the day, we all going through it. Like I said, we all going through it. No matter what, we're all going through it. The situations might be different, but at the end of the day, you still land in the same category.
Right.
I'm curious. I'm curious. So like, how did this affect your other child?
Affect? Well, when I found out he was Down syndrome, that I told her about it, my biggest worry, honestly, because I kept asking her, she was 15 when I was pregnant. I kept asking her, are you going to still love him And she kept saying, yes, mom. I said, you know, because it worried me. Like, I didn't want her to feel any or treat him any different mm-hmm. or feel like I'm going to be abandoning you because I have to pay more attention to him. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, so their bond right now is beautiful. Like, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Truly.
Yeah, he gets on her nerve. He'll do this and that. But at the end of the day, they all come in one accord. So, you know, she helps me out a lot as much as she can when she's home.
Right.
You know, but we make it the best because at the end of the day, like I said, it is what you make it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a child is going to grow up depending on how you raise them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because you're the mentor.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Yeah. And I guess on the flip side of that for me, people always ask me like, oh, do you want more children? Like, obviously everybody's like, oh, well, you're young. Like, do you want more children? And I'm like, I mean, I would like my son to have a sibling. But it's been a journey with Gabriel. So it's made me think twice about whether I want to embark on a different type of journey with another child. But I mean, I do. At the end of the day, I think my son will thrive with a sibling. But a question that comes to me all the time, even his specialists, they're like, so he's turning 5. Are you thinking about having another kid?
Right.
And my first question is, are you paying for my other child? No. Okay. So then no. It's just difficult because I mean, it's super interesting to hear Soleil's story and how her family, I'm telling you, I've met Jada and I've seen her and Josias's relationship and it's beautiful. It's so beautiful.
It is.
Their bond is so special and it's amazing. And they have such a huge age gap and they're just so close.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
But it's hard.
He's imitator.
But it's hard. I mean, being a single parent with a child with special needs and just navigating just dating, period.
Right.
And thinking about having another kid, it's a lot.
It's a lot. That is a lot. What is the most difficult part about having a child with a disability?
The most difficult part. Ada, you want to go first?
I'm here trying to just like swallow my tears.
I'll
fuck over to you for the time being.
All right. The question is, what has been the most difficult part?
Right. Right? What is the most difficult part?
The most difficult part. That's a good question. The most difficult part is every day is different. Every day is a different challenge. Every day, I mean, I'm not going to say it's difficult because I learned from him. He learns from me. But every day is different with him. Like, you don't know what to expect. Like, yeah, I think that's what it is. I don't know what to expect with him. Because he's a character. You'll meet him one day, hopefully.
Yeah, I hope so.
I don't know. That's a good question. I never really thought about it. Because you know what? I don't think I think about it like that so much. Because like I like the challenges too.
Right.
And he's a challenge.
That's good.
Being accepted, I guess. How he's going to be accepted as he gets older.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, how people are going to react and treat him. I think that's my biggest... I'm not going to say my biggest fear, but that's one of my worries. Is just that to me is a challenge.
Right.
Him being accepted.
So I think for me, my biggest challenge is that I have always told myself that I'm comfortable with change. Like, I've always been like, oh, yeah. I mean, when you apply for a job, you adapt well to change. You're like, yeah, of course I do. Like, I thrive in environments of change or whatnot. But you really honestly don't know what it is to thrive in an environment of change unless you have a child who's consistently trying that for you. You know what I mean? Like, you don't know how it feels to technically be pushed to your limits on a consistent basis.
Mm-hmm.
Not their behavior at all. I'm not talking about behavior wise. I'm just saying like health-wise and
health-wise, yep.
Society-wise and expectation-wise. Like, you don't know how all these consistent changes like truly, truly make you a stronger person or they break you. Like either it's a make or break.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I've learned the most or what's been most challenging to me is just accepting change for what it is. Because, you know, as corny as it is, my favorite quote in life is that the only constant in life is change.
Right.
Right. But you mm-hmm. really don't embody that. You really don't think about how you truly react in a consistently changing environment until you're in one.
Until you're in one, yep.
And being Gabriel's mom, I'm in a constantly changing environment. Like, I mean, we spoke about it a bit earlier. Like, Gabriel just started walking about, like, 2 months ago. But, you know, 2 months, like, before that, 3 months ago, my child wasn't walking. And right. he was going to be 5 this year. And I was already planning, okay, so what does that mean for when he goes to kindergarten and this, then the third? And then I decided to keep him back in pre-K for a consistent another year. And so there's all these changes that happen simultaneously. And that's, I think, the most challenging for me, just to keep up with it and making sure that I'm okay
right.
as a parent. Like, and not making sure that, like, my cup is full so that when I'm taking care of my child, I'm not giving him the fumes. You know what I mean? I'm not giving him just emptiness, because I also need to be full. And I need mm-hmm. to be fulfilled as a parent and as a woman.
Right.
So.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
But it's true. It's true. And that goes with anything, you know? Change is definitely something that you have to learn to
get accustomed
right,
to
be right. acceptance and mm-hmm. all that.
Because, I mean, we all know that change is produces fear in everyone. I mean, that's just not, it's not specific, and it's not exclusive to people that have children with special needs.
Right, no.
Like, change produces fear, and it triggers fear in everyone, most mm-hmm. people anyways. But, you know, like for Gabriel's story, when he was at 6 months, to have the seizures, to be pushed back for such a amount of time in terms of his progress, like he was developing typically up until 6 months when he started getting those seizures, and then his whole development was erased entirely. So we were literally starting from day one all over again.
Yep.
Right.
So, you know, and then having plans, like I'm saying, the changes is what's crazy, because having plans and being comfortable with all that being completely thrown into the garbage and making another plan. I like making lists. I have a planner. I am very organized. But knowing that those plans can change has been my biggest hurdle and my biggest struggle and my biggest challenge.
Right.
So
that's, I mean, I'm listening to you and it's like, that's something that I still struggle with, you know, change. Cause it's hard. It's hard to, you can say, yeah, I'm good with change until you're in the situation, you know,
changing environment. And then you're like, whoa.
I really, right.
Like, this is another curveball. Like, oh my gosh, like you just finished picking up the pieces of one thing. And then another thing comes and happens.
Yep. And then you don't know how you're going to react to the change in it either, you know?
Right. And it's like, that's when that constant worry comes into play. You're just like, okay, so you're literally on defense at all times. You're just like, what's next? Get like, mm-hmm. just, and then when you're in a state in which it's like, everything is coasting, you're literally like fearful. Cause you're like, something is coming. I know it. It's been too chill. Like, what's the,
yeah, what? You're right in that wave. And then another one comes.
Yep. Yep, right. Yep,
you know?
That happened for me when I found out that I was having twins. And then I was worried my whole pregnancy after that. Like, I just had a lot of anxiety. And mm-hmm. once they were born prematurely, first, you know, you're worrying because you don't know if they're going to make it. Then right. you're worrying about what does that mean developmentally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so all of these things that of course... there's not a lot of people guiding you. There's not a lot of people telling you, this is what could happen. This is what could happen, you know, and things like that. So for me, that was my biggest thing of accepting change was that, like how much my life was going to change now that they're in my life, you know, and also to accepting the fact that your kids are going to develop when they're going to develop. You know, they're going to hit timelines when they're going to hit them. You know how, like, for example, my twins, they're 3, going to be 4. They're still not fully potty trained. And I'm perfectly fine with that, you know, but there's a lot of people that'll ask you like, oh, they're still not potty trained, you know, like without thinking, how do you know how this is really affecting me at home? You understand what I'm telling you?
Exactly. Like, I'm on the same boat you're on because he's going to be 5 and I'm still going through the potty training.
Yeah. And I don't even care. Like I said this, I don't remember to who the last person I asked me, I said, listen, they're going to be potty trained when they are. When they're ready, they will be ready. I'm not stressed about it. For now, I'll keep changing diapers. Like I'm just not going to keep putting a target to my children. They're going to talk when they, because, you know, they don't talk in full sentences. I did the early intervention. I did the speech. I did all that stuff. You know, they had a lot of, they had a lot of stuff that they had to do and they still don't talk. They're going to be 4. They say, you know, they're getting better, but they still not going to have a conversation with you like me and you, you know?
Yeah.
So even accepting those things have been major for me, you know?
Yeah.
Because for my son, my older son, it was, you know, regular, you know, other kids, you know, he talked and he walked and he whatever. For my boys, it's been different, you know, and it's 2. So one does it first, the other one does it after, you know. So all those things, you know, we're going through different things, but it's still similar, you know.
Yeah, like yeah. I said, yeah.
I really feel you because even though I don't have another child to compare my son to, like, from what I heard, it's just, you know, the comparison. I compare my child all the time and I try not to. But it's really difficult. Like, I mean, at the end of the day, we're all humans. And we all want our children to succeed and we all want them to be at par to their peers. And it's difficult. That aspect is super difficult to look at your child and be like, wow, my child is definitely behind. Or these dreaded IEP meetings that literally,
oh my god,
it looks like your child doesn't do anything.
Exactly.
And you're just like,
don't even get me started with that.
Not my kid. Are you serious? My kid does so much more than what's on that paper.
Exactly.
So it's really difficult. I mean, I can't even fathom. I had a huge respect for moms that had children with special needs even prior to me having Gabriel, but now I really understand. Like, we go through the ringer because, yeah. I'm just saying, like, going back to the IEP meetings, it's rough for some people that don't know your children to tell you about your kid. It's really difficult to sit there and not, like, flip the table over.
And listen, let me tell you, did you do it on over the phone?
This time around, yeah, but this is my 3rd IEP meeting. Well, technically, my 4th, because I had to fight.
You had another one?
No, remember when he went into pre-K, I had 2 of them.
No, I know, but I'm saying the last IEP when you called me that was on the phone, had another one after that?
No, girl. Mm-mm. They figured everything out after I gave them my spiel. How I told them how I really felt about it. Going into pre-K, he had 2 IEP meetings because the first one was horrific. Horrific. Awful. Completely insanely awful. So this is my 3rd one, but yeah, Nyris, going back to my 4th one, going back to your question, yes, I had it over the phone this time.
Mine was over, like, the video Zoom thing.
Yeah, mine too, yep.
And I just felt like I was grunting my teeth because there was a lot of things that they were saying, and I'm like, what are you basing this on? Like, I would stop them. Like, when are you basing this on? My kids are totally advanced now. You haven't seen them in, like, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Like, they're doing so much more. But, you know, I try very hard. It's taken me a very long time to get to this place. I try very hard to not allow people to kind of label my kids. Mm-hmm. You understand? Because it's like, just because my son went to school 1 week and he decided that he did not want to play, he did not want to cooperate, he did not want to do shapes, doesn't mean he doesn't know how to do all those things because he does it all the time. You understand? So I try... It was very hard to sit through that meeting and I just let them talk and I'm just like, whatever, okay. Like, you know, because at the end of the day, it's like, whatever the paper says, you're basing it on probably the first month they were there. Maybe the first 3 months.
You know that the kids go through stuff just like we go through. We have our good days. We have our bad days.
Right.
We have our bad weeks.
Right, right, right.
Like, I have good days when my son is all day, he's using the potty. We're cheering, we're dancing around. Tomorrow comes and he's pooping on his boxers. You
Right.
know, it's more good than bad. We have more bad than good. You know, whatever the situation is. At the end of the day, every child is different. I don't think they should be labeled, you know, and
Exactly.
every child is gonna get to where they need to get at their own speed. That's how I see
Whenever
it.
they're gonna get
Yeah.
there.
Same
You
here.
know, because not
Thinking about like, oh, I'm gonna be collaborative. I'm gonna be on my best behavior. So I'm gonna be on my best behavior. I'm not gonna give anybody attitude. Like,
Yeah.
and not that I'm problematic because I'm not, but I think in the past 4 IEP meetings, I've learned how to stand my ground, especially after the first two, before my son was even in school. Like, it was honestly the first IEP meeting that I had to even transition him over from early intervention into preschool. It was traumatizing. Completely and totally traumatizing. But I told myself I'm never gonna let myself get to that place again, in which I'm crying in front of the people that are telling me that my son doesn't do anything. So I've learned that if I have to take proof for me to show you, like, look, my child is doing this. My child is doing this. Like, what are you talking about? What I need to see the date and time that you collected this data, because it's not accurate.
Right.
So the comparing of the children is really difficult. The fact that society in general, it's whatever's on a piece of paper that matters. And that's not what it is. Quite frankly, that's not what it is. And
Yeah, pretty much.
also, like, people automatically assume because your child hasn't reached a certain level, like
At a certain
something's
time.
right, like oh wow, you know, like something's off, something's wrong, something's whatever. And it's like, no, they're just not ready. They're not ready.
Exactly.
And it is what it is, you know. And I feel like for me, you know, my kids, they don't have a disability, but they have a learning. They've been struggling with their learning disability, you know, like with the speech and meeting certain milestones and whatever. But I feel like you become more aware of children that have more disabilities than them, and you think, like, you know, you can't automatically assume because the child isn't walking yet, oh, it's because of their disability. No, maybe they're not ready. Maybe, you know what I'm saying? Maybe they're not having a good week. So these are all important things that you guys are sharing and allowing the listeners to kind of see life through your eyes and understand that not every child is gonna be like, you know, like your daughter, that your 20-year-old or my 10-year-old son, that, you know, they walked when they walked, when they hit their milestones. And you know, so children with disabilities, children with special needs, they're normal children,
Yeah,
you
are.
know. And then that's another thing that it grinds my gears when people refer to our kids as like not normal or something. Like, I refrain from using the word normal, period, because I don't think that
Let me ask you, what is normal?
normal,
What do people consider normal?
right? Normal is not
Themselves,
subjective.
themselves.
Is not There's no data proving what's normal and what's not, because
Exactly.
so I use
They're normal to their standards,
right.
but everybody's standards is different, because I could tell you I'm normal and you meet me and you're like, wow, she's not normal at all, you
No,
know?
exactly. We all struggling through something, you
Yeah,
know?
I refrain from that. So, like, for the people out there, please stop referring to our children as being abnormal or whatnot. Like, I personally, if I refer to someone else's children, I just say typical developing, because my child is not abnormal and your child is not normal. My child is just developing a little bit differently
Different.
than yours.
Different, yeah.
Along with what you're saying, what are some of the other stigmas surrounding children with disabilities that you guys hear or have to deal with often?
Should I start with my last IEP meeting, Soleil, or what?
You can do that one, because that one right there, that one had me hot that day.
That our children will get left behind at some point throughout their educational experience. That they won't,
Oh my God.
that there's, yeah, girl, yes.
What? Well, let's put it like this. If they're not held back now, they're still going to be held back at their grade. So either way,
how do they know this?
Exactly.
I'm
telling you, it was just, when I tell you that I've had like very interesting conversations in the past almost five years. Yeah, girl, this was this past IEP meeting. Basically I had to fight for them to keep Gabriel back in pre-K. And I'm keeping him back because, first of all, he didn't go to school a full year with him walking. He started walking right before this whole pandemic quarantine started going on. So I feel like if he goes to school at least a whole year walking, he'll be exploring a lot more. I mean, my child has grown leaps and bounds and he's been home. So imagine at school.
Right.
So I firmly believe that, I'm trying to prepare him for as far as he wants to go. So, and that all starts with a good, solid educational foundation. And if that means that he has to go to pre-K again next year, then that's what it is. And that's what we're going to do. So, but to be told that your child is going to get left behind regardless at some point in his educational career, like third grade, so you shouldn't keep him back in pre-K, like that's horrible. That doesn't
make no sense, though, if you think about it. It's like, why not hold him back another year? Why let him continue to go all the way to third grade, and then in third grade, when they supposedly full with all this knowledge, let's hold them back. Let's do it now.
Yeah,
let's go ahead.
No, that they're assuming based on stuff that they've seen, whatever. They're going by stupid numbers.
By paper. Like you said, it's all paper. Exactly. So why not deal with the situation now? Why wait 3 more years? Why?
But so
if
the stigma is like that our children are basically there's a huge stigma that children with special needs are not capable. And I refuse to give in to that stigma. That's not true by any means of the anything. Like there are plenty of children and not even children, but of adults at this point that have special needs that do make it. And that's just that's a period at the end of that sentence. That's not like a dot, dot, dot. No, there's plenty of people that have special needs that make it, that they have their own business, that they work, they make their own income. They live on their own.
That are models
that are literally that they do anything.
That are lawyers, that are like, are you kidding me?
Anything. So I need society. And I need society. I am calling society to presume competence. Do not presume incompetence just because my child has special needs. Because he will literally leave you stunned out of the little tips and tricks that he be pulling on people. So presume competence because our children are capable.
Let me tell you that they're so smart. Kids with Down syndrome are so smart. I'm telling you, he outsmarts me every day. Like, he plays me like a deck of cards every day. Okay? Wow. And he knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I feel that the audience should know that don't doubt these kids. You know, give them hope. You know, speak life into them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I feel that if the world did more of that and show more love, I think the world would be a better place. Honestly,
it's to be accepting.
People will have different People will have different mentalities, and I feel that educators should be educating more people on touching issues of the stuff that we're dealing with now.
Right.
You know?
Helping those parents that are about to have a child disabilities.
Even
giving them hope.
Exactly. And I feel that even in high school, this is something that should be put in books.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because if you could put history in a book and educate that person and that person be full of knowledge, why can't you educate on someone with knowing, okay, this is what it is. We're dealing with people with disabilities. Let's educate the kids are the future, right?
Right.
So why not educate the future with knowledge of that? Let's give them more information. Let's give them more resources.
Mm-hmm. Right, because I think
you know, let's do more funding mm-hmm. as well, because it's also funding. Out here in Orlando, there's really nothing besides the Down Syndrome Association and the Down Syndrome Foundation. There's really nothing. Nothing. Ada, you
maybe
know.
Maybe you can start something.
I've been trying. Ada knows. I've been trying to get this Gigi.
She's already in that space.
Good.
Yeah,
good.
The Gigi Playhouse. Right now is on a pause because of all this thing that's going on. Yeah. But, you know, we need to bring that more. I think every city and every state should have more programs where, mm-hmm. you know, kids with disabilities, it doesn't matter what disability you have. You fall into the spectrum, let's build something to where these kids right. can come, you know?
Yeah.
And not feel any different.
Yeah.
You know, because at the end of the day, we all won. So why treat one person because there's something, there's a defect with you, oh, let's treat you different. No.
And also place that, you know, I'm a big advocate for moms mm-hmm. because I feel like we go through it. We go through it and we, most of the time, we don't talk about it. We suppress.
Yep.
And, you know, I feel like when your children are going through different things, you know, you don't necessarily share with people how you really feel because you're afraid of being judged, you're afraid of being, you know, signaled, you're afraid of whatever, you know, there's just a lot of being things labeled. That go with it. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's important. I'm very happy to hear that you were trying to start something because I think it's amazing. I think it's needed. Especially for children to have a place where they feel, you know, where they feel the same, where they feel empowered, where they feel hopeful and exactly. they feel like there's nothing wrong with them. And also a place for the moms to feel like, you know what, to them having a bad fucking day, mm-hmm. you know, and yeah. I need to be here so you guys can show me some support because that's just how it is.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the reality. Mm-hmm. And it's with everything, you know. With everything.
And I
know you go ahead.
Going back to the stigma thing though, like we just need to wake up and realize that we don't live in a vacuum. Like we don't live in separate bubbles. Like there's not just one bubble over here and another bubble over there and then you just don't interact ever. Like they say that because I remember when I was in high school, I don't ever remember interacting with any children that had special needs in my high school. I knew that they were there, but If I had any interaction with them, I'm lying because I didn't, you know? So I truly believe that I think raising awareness that people with disabilities are in the world and they are active participants and they are contributors to society, like positive contributors to society, is huge mm-hmm. because people need to be made aware that they exist. Just like we make sure that our kids know and have awareness of others around them, I need people to know that my child exists too, that he's not just a nobody, you know?
Right.
So that's something that really just grinds my gears. Like just ignoring my child just because he has special needs. Like, no, you know, have your child walk up to my kid. They don't have to be the best friends, but teach them acceptance. Teach them that my kid is not mm-hmm. scary because he's different.
Right, right. I think it all starts at a young age. Also.
Right.
Now that you touch that subject and you say young age, why do they have the kids with Down syndrome or any disability starting from school? Like I'm talking about elementary. Why are they separated? Have you not noticed that,
girl?
Like, why are they not all in one room?
I don't know.
And I think that's the main issue. They separate them. So therefore, the ones that are supposedly normal, hashtag with two hands, with two fingers, the ones that are supposedly normal, they're not accepting the fact that there's kids with disability because they're not to be seen. If you've noticed that mm-hmm. you go to school, to these elementaries, where are the kids with disabilities at in a whole totally different room? Why?
Mm-hmm.
Why can't they be all in one room and all be treated normal? Why?
Right.
And that's one of my biggest fears. I think that's why I didn't put my son in elementary, in regular public school, and I chose the charter school, you know, with UCP.
Yeah.
I think that was one of my biggest fears. It's like, why do I feel like my son has to be separated from this whole other classroom? I don't feel like it's fair. I feel it starts from a very young age of, and I think that's why that's why people are the way they are now, because the system is teaching them that. That's my opinion.
It starts from a young age.
Because it's like for example, to change the subject, racism. Racism is just not, you're not born with that. You're taught.
Right. Mm-hmm. It all goes hand in hand. It's the same.
Exactly. So why can't these kids be all in one class and just be one? The world, like I said, to me, I feel like the world would be such a better place if we were just to be all put and treated as equal. Because they say, oh, the United States, we're equal. No, we're not equal. We're not. We're being separated. We're being labeled.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I will say this, though. My son, my 10-year-old, last year, he, in his class, he had some classmates, I think it was maybe like 3 or 4 that had a disability. Because I remember he would come home and tell me, oh, my classmate, such and such, he has this, he has that. And, you know, I share my snacks and whatever. And I thought it was great. I was like, oh, wow, you know.
Yeah.
But it was like for half the day. So then they would be with the class half the day, and then half the other day they would go somewhere else.
Yeah, it's built into IEPs and stuff like that.
But so, you know what it is? That the system doesn't want to deal with them neither.
Of course. Neither do the teachers.
For example, if there's a child, for instance, my son needs that one-on-one. Because my son, like I said, he's very hyper. He won't sit in circle time like the other kids. He needs that one-on-one. So what happens is with the IEP, and the way the whole education system is, they don't want to pay someone to be one-on-one with the child in a class.
Fight for a para is really difficult because of funding.
You know, and it's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you expect the child to learn if he's not focusing and he needs that one-on-one, but you're not giving him that one-on-one? So how do you expect them to learn?
Right. Yeah, and additionally, parents of children with special needs, we're not scary. And I say that because I know that a lot of my friends are like, oh, but you know, Etta must be going through so much because she has Gabriel. Scary. I need to have friends too. I need to have people that I can count on, and you know, moms with typical developing children, like, it's okay, we're not scary. We're not contagious. We don't have the cooties. Our children don't have the cooties. We're not, you know what I mean?
I know what you're saying.
Moms,
but I don't think, like, I don't think it's more that parent, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like maybe people are scared, you know, and it's not necessarily of you. People don't know what to say. Sometimes people just don't know what to say, and they just don't say anything at all because
they're not educated.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. And, you know, maybe you guys would be best of friends, but a lot of times people don't know what to say. You know, they don't know how to approach you. They don't know, you know, if it's okay to say certain things without offending you. Again, like I was saying earlier, you know, that's why it's important to always speak your mind and voice certain things, and, you know, let people know, because people don't know. People have no idea.
Well, you know how people can get around that, though? They can just ask. They can ask a question instead of making an assumption or walking up to us.
I see it like this. None of us were born with a handbook. You know, none of us were born with instructions.
Right. Yeah. So just ask. Be like, hey, so, I mean, because I would honestly, being a mom of a child, I would never walk up to another mom and be like, oh, what's wrong with your child? Like, that's a heck no. You need to not walk up to a parent and ask them what's wrong with their child.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So just think, if people had more thought behind what they wanted to say or what they think they should say, then maybe the interactions would be different.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, like, we're regular parents. We just go through some extraordinary situations.
We do.
If you have any questions, comments, and or concerns, you can approach me with them in a way that would make the most sense for any parent.
But also, if you're trying to be friends with someone, we don't need to always talk about my kids, you know, and whatever right. they're going
exactly.
through.
Exactly.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
This is not like the topic of conversation. Like, oh, so, right. you know, because I felt like when my kids were in the NICU, I felt like that was the only thing that I was talking about with people. And it's like, you almost want to not talk about that.
Yep.
Like, I'm trying to not have this conversation. I don't want to think about this stuff. So,
yeah,
I know how you feel. My last question for you ladies is, what advice would you give to parents struggling with children with disabilities or about to have a child with a disability?
So let go for it.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of the right words, and you know, I wanna it's a good question. What advice would I give a parent who's expecting a child with Down syndrome? There's hope out there. You know, don't be scared. It's going to be challenging. Every day is going to be different. You know, expect the unexpected is what I can say.
Mm-hmm.
Stay positive. Have goals. And don't have a limit to, okay, I set up a goal and this is when I want it done. It's never going to get done when you want it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just I believe that God has a timing for everything. And I feel that, like I said earlier, that every child is different. You know, don't expect your child to be the same as the other one, because every child has a different milestone. Every child has a different goal. They're going to reach it when they're ready.
Right.
What else can I say? Push forward. Stay motivated. Don't give up. It's not going to be easy. You know, I stay prayed up every day. My son is a challenge. I'm not gonna sit here and sugarcoat it. I don't know. Just, you know, be an advocate for your child. Be that voice. You know, be heard. Don't be scared to speak.
So my advice to parents that have a child with special needs or those that are expecting a child with special needs is first and foremost, not even advice, it's just congratulations on your wonderful child. And then the advice would be, know that you are your child's best and biggest advocate. Be patient with your child and with yourself. When you're ready and if you feel comfortable, get involved in groups that will help you navigate your child's diagnosis. I know that it helped me a lot. It may not be for everyone, but if that's the avenue that you are interested in, well, I think it's a great one to just explore. Schedule quality time for yourself and schedule it as often as you may need. Even if it's just a half hour, just literally to recharge your batteries. And then when schooling becomes a topic of conversation, make sure that you familiarize yourself with your rights as a parent and your child's rights as a student. If you need any help with that, you have the option of reaching out to an advocate to help you with that. And then finally, it's just welcome to the club. It's okay to be scared. It's okay to be overwhelmed. but you are your child's best, like I said, best advocate, and you are the perfect parent for your child.
Hey guys, so that was the end of my podcast, and it was really great. It was really great for me, and I'm sure it's going to be great when you guys listen to it as well. I was pleasantly educated on, you know, different perspective. And I'm so grateful that Etta and Soleil decided to join me and share their experiences and their journey and their challenges with us, and to educate us, you know, to educate us as to how to better understand and be able to see life through their eyes and see and understand that, you know, we may not always know what to say, but it's better to just ask, obviously in a polite way, but so that we can learn to coexist and be respectful and be mindful of everyone and the different children, you know, because at the end of the day, these are all children that are, you know, living in their realities and in their lives. And at the end of the day, each child deserves to feel special and deserves to feel treated like a child. So, you know, I truly hope you guys enjoyed this episode as much as I did. For me, it was a great learning experience, and I hope you guys share and continue to tune in, and stay tuned for the next episode. Catch you on the flip side.